Good morning. Welcome to the FTS bet slip on Wednesday, the 5th of May. It's guest pod day. Later in the pod, we've got Brian Brewis. Brian is a Geordie, joined FTS a couple of years ago, but has done some gambling long before that, but also changed his life, Brian. He set about some hard work, and he tells a story of how he done that. Very, very interesting. As I say to him in the pod, I just like talking to people that you know, have interesting life stories, how they've gone about doing things. And Brian is certainly one of those that I think we can all learn from. Okay, what have we got? What have we got? I don't know. I'm not going to enter into any political debates today. Can't be bothered. Same old garbage being sent to me, the New World Order. Books. Right, going to go back to kids' books. Because I did some kids' books earlier, a few weeks ago. Obviously, I don't know what's going to happen with schooling, but you're going to get into the summer holidays as well, getting your kids to read. So other books, one from me that I read as a kid, which was great, which I couldn't remember on the day, I don't think, was The Talking Parcel by Gerald Darrell. Really good book, and all Gerald Darrell's books are good. I can't remember whether I put it on there or not. But then a few of you came up with some suggestions of things I'd missed out. Wind in the Willows, which is a great book, and Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. But then going into things like The Famous Five, which I had forgotten about. Obviously, Harry Potter. I don't know whether people have got into that. And the Narnia books, which I absolutely loved as a kid. The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. I think the books are much better than the film adaptations of them. So lots of books there that you can read. Famous Five, as I say, Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, all the Chronicles of Narnia, Alice's Adventure in Wonderland, Wind in the Willows, and Gerald Darrell books. I was also pointed to a book which I think there's an adult version, but Rich Dad, Poor Dad for Teens, which sort of identifies youngsters with the sort of value of money and things. So that one is, you know, if you've got a kid a little bit older moving into their sort of 14s, 15s, 16s, Rich Dad, Poor Dad for Teens is a highly recommended book for them. Also, I was sent a link by Sharon for things that they've made free on Money Saving Expert. So Money Saving Expert, if you search Money Saving Expert and things they've made free, this is basically through the lockdown, a number of companies making stuff free that they would have previously charged for, be it audiobooks, box sets, fitness classes, wellbeing apps, stuff like that. So moneysavingexpert.com, things they've made free. If you Google that, you'll find it. And they've got great stuff on there for kids and things. I had a look at it, superb. So that's another angle that you can go to find things to keep your kids entertained. Football's coming back. It's coming back. It's coming back. I did put the 15th yesterday, but Merkel has now asked for a 14-day quarantine. So it's looking like the 22nd of May, the Bundesliga may well resume, probably will. And then we've got Poland, Portugal the week after. So we are going to be getting back into some football and back into some formality for me of normal routines, processing sheets, getting up. So, yes, we'll have the build up to that. But, something to look forward to. And obviously we've got the British ideas of what to do. Coming up sort of over Saturday, Sunday, I believe, of how we're going to start to move through this. Right, so I've done the books. Let's do a recipe. This is lovely, this recipe. This is a little sort of brunchy, breakfasty type thing. I absolutely love it. My boy loves it. It is a potato and poached egg hash recipe. Skin on, boil some potatoes. The little salad Charlotte potatoes, something like that, are good. Boil them. Don't overboil them. You don't want them falling apart. So you want boil them for about 15 minutes. Drain them. Let them cool right down. So you can do those the night before. Once they're cool, chop them up into sort of inch chunks. Slice them up. Then get a frying pan with a bit of oil in it. Get a couple of rashers of bacon and chop that into sort of similar inch type squares. Get the bacon and the potatoes in the pan on a bit of olive oil, and cook it for a good 10 or 15 minutes until the potatoes start going a bit brown around the edges. Once they do that, add in some chopped spring onion, get three or four spring onions, slice them up, put them in, and get some cherry tomatoes and put those in. Doesn't matter how many, you can put as many as you like in, 8, 10, 12, and give those a good 4 or 5 minutes there. Literally just get all that, get it out on a plate, season it, salt and pepper, poached egg on top, poach an egg, boil the water, whisk it round so it's spinning, break the egg into the middle of it, literally a couple of minutes, longer if you like it firm, but you want it really runny so it just breaks out over the top of your potato and tomatoes and bacon, and a bit of black pepper, off you go. Very simple to make, really good way to, really good lunch, sort of brunchy type thing to have mid-morning. So there you go, potato hash with poached eggs, absolutely beautiful. I don't know whether to go into this, but last night, I mean, I haven't laughed this hard for ages. I made the ribs yesterday, and Suggsy, I put a picture on Gary Smith. I'm in a lot of WhatsApp groups. I'm in one where Gary, Kevin, Suggsy, and Gary's kids are going to make the ribs. So I was making them yesterday, so I took a picture of them in the morning marinating, and then I took a picture when they were cooked and said, so just so Gary had an idea of what to expect, what to look like. And they were stunning, absolutely superb last night, if I do say so myself. But in that conversation, Suggsy then posted he's on a diet at the minute. He has 5 or 6 days where he can eat whatever he likes, and a couple of days a week, only 600 calories. So when I posted the picture in the morning, it's, oh, great, because he was like, it was one of his 600 calorie days, and he doesn't like talking about food on those days because he's starving himself. So when I posted them in the evening, he then posted a picture of what he was having, which was a salmon with a Italian sort of herb seasoning on it. And I didn't really think anything of it. I put it there, and he put the picture on there. And I just moved on. And this, it could be one of those stories where you had to be there. But a few minutes later, the phone goes. I'm trying to get ready for a, I was doing a webinar last night, so I was trying to get ready for that. And a few minutes later, the phone goes. Kevin puts on the group, "What the fuck is that tray?" So I've scrolled back to the picture that he's posted, old Suggsy. And I mean, I don't know what it was he was using. It was an old tin foil tray. It was obviously off some sort of ready meal that he'd washed out and perhaps used it about 300 or 400 times. I don't know, because it then just took off. Gary's gone, it's an old dog bowl. Kevin, from an old ready meal, I reckon. So Paul's then come on to try and defend himself. It's just a mini roasting tin, probably one I've saved from a previous ready meal. There's no need for a full-size one, is there? I'm laughing, I'm chuckling at the two of them. And then Kevin's put, "I reckon COVID-19 wouldn't go in that tray." Paul's then come on, "You really are a bunch of idiots." And I'm crying now. And then I said, I'm going to have to do this whole webinar with a picture of that bloody tray in my head now. Gary, it's never been a tray. He got it off a local heroin addict. Kevin, no, the local heroin addict had thrown it out. It's been used by the Broxbourne Crystal Meth Society. Anyway, they've gone on slagging this tray, and I'm going to put a picture of the tray. Will be the podcast picture today. You can make your own minds up. But the bit that really made the night was, I've done the about to do the webinar. Paul's come on. "Forget talking about the bloody tray. I just went to the oven to take the salmon out, only to discover I hadn't fecking put it in the bloody oven yet." So he's sitting there thinking he's cooking his salmon, the dopey flipping Egypt. Bearing in mind he's starved himself all day, he's turned the oven on and hasn't even put the fish in the oven. So that's me. I've put on there. I'm done. I'm absolutely done now. I was crying. He's put, you may be fecking done. I'm fecking hungry. Not had a single mouthful of food all day. Now I've got to wait another half hour. It was absolutely killing me. It was absolutely killing me. Suggsy at his best. I've no idea. I mean, the tray is an absolute disgrace. But then forgetting to cook your fish. But we'll let the Twitterati decide on the state of that tray, Paul. I'm going to put the picture up as the bet slip picture for you. But he is quality, the boy. He is absolute quality. Just the way he got. It's exactly how Kevin said, what the fuck is that tray? I could picture myself in Paul's kitchen if I'd been stood next to him when he was making it. That's exactly the phrase I'd have come out with. As I say, probably had to be there. What have I done? I've done the book. I've done the recipe. Right, let's get in and talk to Brian. So I've spoke to Brian Brewis, nice half-hour chat with Brian. So I'll let you listen to that, and then I'll be back at the end after that. But hopefully you enjoy what Brian has to say. And this morning we're joined by Brian Brewis from Newcastle. Happy your birthday this week, Brian. Happy birthday from the FTS crowd, and thank you for coming on.
Yeah, not a problem. Thanks very much.
I do hope people can understand the accent. We've got the thick Geordie accent. I do take the piss out of Newcastle. It is one of my absolute favourite places, I have to say.
Lots of people do.
I've been at football for a few times, and Scotty Scott, who I mentioned regularly on the pod, I met him midpoint once for we were going to go over some football and football systems, and it was the night Spurs were playing Dortmund. In the Europa League, it was. It was before Champions League, and he came down. I went up. He came down for Scott. I went up. Come up, and I said, "We're going to get stuffed tonight." And he said, "Nah, you'll be all right." And we got done 4-1. Watching that in a pub in Newcastle, can't actually remember much because we got absolutely smashed out of our trip.
Yeah, not very many people do remember the trips to Newcastle.
But, no. I have to say, I've not had many good ones. I mean, that was 4-1. I don't think I've seen us beat you up there.
Last game didn't turn out too well for Tottenham, I think. But we were already relegated by then. I think it was the 5-1.
5-1, you beat us, didn't you? Yeah.
Yeah,
that's when that allowed Arsenal to pip us for... third or fourth, third, didn't it, or whatever.
Yeah. I think it was, yeah.
Right, as the normal format, let's talk about your betting side first. And you did match betting. How did you get into that?
I think it was basically follows a similar track, I think, to most people. I just saw the advert. I was trawling through online, as you do. Heard this phenomenon of match betting. Decided to give it a go. Done reasonably well with it. Did reasonably well with a service that followed the match betting, just dealing with each way bets, really. But obviously, that's got limited scope in terms of how longevity and how long it can actually carry out that process for before the bootmakers catch on. But it did really well up until the point where obviously I didn't have any more betting accounts to operate it. But that was that. And that's obviously that I had come across FTS prior to that. And had joined one of the services in FTS quite some time ago, but didn't apply that by my own admission as well as I could, and that's what brings us here today. Because I have been to the seminar in 2018, and then from then obviously the trading seminar last year, and obviously that's where we are this point.
I met you in Manchester, didn't I, 2018?
And
you said to me in your little sort of email that you sent in that most of your early scars come from racing.
Yeah, I mean, this was prior to the match betting escapade. But, yeah, just basically following the wrong advice, got sucked into various marketing ploys. And it focused mainly around the racing aspects of betting,
So you got into betting before match betting then. You were a bettor before. That wasn't your first
Yeah,
gambling experience.
it wasn't me for first foray into the gambling world, no.
How did you get into actual gambling? What made you what made you I mean it's something that sort of intrigues me because I did have the odd, but I never really got into it. I certainly Googled horse racing system or whatever. What made you get into it?
Basically, it was just again seeing various. I mean, this was probably before the advent of when the internet was in full flow. I mean, obviously, I mean, how you end up on these mail shots is just. I mean, it was just unbelievable. But just got sucked into a couple of things and started to become interested in the different ways of actually betting. But at that time, it was really focused around sort of horse racing and following different various staking programs and different, which the arse really fell out of them no sooner than had they been started. And it just followed it followed a similar path because I think it until the penny actually drops. That these guys are just there to really just to make money off the back of what they're selling. And if anything that they did have to sell was worth a fraction of what they were selling it for, you know, what they were claiming it to be, then they just wouldn't be selling it.
No, I mean, and I think now that it's moved full scale to Twitter now, hasn't it? Some of the nonsense on there. It is. I see why. I understand why people get into it. I do it. It's the fact that they keep repeating it that I find staggering. That they just jump from one to another and think, well, this one will be different. I think that's
That's
the.
it. I think it is, and there's a lot to be said for that fear of missing out mentality as well. And that's a very difficult trait to get rid of.
Yeah, I agree totally. So you came to a seminar, you put the training to one side for the minute. You joined Ultimate and got your the Ultimate database. So what year was that? Was that this season or the season before?
It was the season before, but again, I've started using the Ultimate database properly last season, whereby I just spent a week going through the Ultimate databases, the new leagues, and the Ultimate database and the pivot tables, and literally spent a week just trying to unearth some potential angles that might have looked promising, and they've done okay. I would criticize. I make one criticism on in terms of what I'm actually doing this year, and perhaps that there's just a few too many bets for my liking. So I think that needs some refinement as well.
Some less is more.
Yeah, definitely.
I think I mean, I've been talking to people over this period, and I think that's. I was talking last night to a group, and I sort of I hinted at it in the podcast a couple of days ago. If you learn to master one of the downsides to having my sheets, and I say it a lot, and I'm very wary of it because in the wrong hands, they can be as bad as they can be good. Is you could get that database, particularly with both of them together, what you've got 11 leagues covered there, and you could build 15, 20 systems. And you do tie yourself in knots, you're spreading yourself too thin. A lot of the bets will repeat then because, you know, there are only, in effect, if you've got 39 games on that main database a week, there's probably only 10 to 12 good value opportunities.
And that has happened in some of the systems I've used, especially on the new leagues, where I have a couple of, I think I have three different lay of the draw macros in there. Some may be combined with home wins or away wins, but I do find that there's some repetition in there. So I think that's certainly one of the things I have learned, if anything, over the course of this season, is that repetition can actually spread you a little bit too thin, especially when you're using macros that are combining different markets.
And it's the mindset, you know, you have a 2 or 3 point loser, you know, whatever it is, laying Barcelona or whatever, laying the draw, whatever. It's the mindset of that big whack and the sort of process, then that's going to take me 3, 4, 5 weeks to get it back, providing everything goes well, you know, if I get another knock next week. So it is, and I'm quite keen on that. It's an area I'm going to look at in the sort of for next season in the build up, how to use it a bit better. But like I say, people get these sheets and can run away.
Yeah.
And then you've joined. See, so yeah, that's good. I mean, you're obviously making progress. I think that's good.
I think it's progress, if anything. I think it's in terms of the process, because until you actually realize that it's the process that drives the thing and the psychology behind that, I cannot see how you can be successful in this game. And that's some of the mistakes I've made in the past. Not just through Ultimate, there is a process, and like everything else in life, it's again not looking too far ahead as well, because that can be very disheartening as well when you do have these down periods and these dry spells, and it's just to keep chipping away, really.
No, I agree totally. I mean, you've heard me say it many times. That's if you do focus on just the day-to-day process, doing that day, move on, don't pay a massive attention to results. And you've looked at the racing, and you've
Yeah,
used that
definitely.
tool,
Yeah.
that bet, which is brilliant. I mean, reading this is an exact armor. I spoke to some guys last night, and I remember the first year I got Soccer Stato, which was the precursor to FDD, and it was a built-in stats program, so it worked internally, just a Windows program. And I just looked at it for the first year. I didn't bet. I played with it. I found things that I might want to follow that day and checked it. It's that ability to rush in. So when you sent me your email
Yeah,
and said,
definitely. And I think you could. I mean, I love the wrap tool, to be honest. I think it's excellent.
oh, I think I've lost you. Oh, I think we've lost Brian for a bit.
Any bets?
Oh, I lost you then, Brian. I lost you
All
for
right. All right. You're back.
You went, I love the rap tool, and then I lost you.
Right. Well, yeah. Sorry about that. What I was going to say is that the wrap tool, I mean, you could spend months on that wrap tool, really. And when I did su subscribe to the racing at the start of last year, I think it was, I didn't have any intention whatsoever of placing any bets. I think it was the research side of me kicking in, wanting to just try and find out as much as I could about that side of betting, a side of betting which really has hasn't haven't done too well in the past. Yeah, it's a real eye opener.
A tough game racing. I think it's much tougher than football. Personally, I know there's people who find it easier, but I find it you've got to have a real mentality to dig in. If you had a rap equivalent for football, like that.
Yeah, definitely.
That's what we're looking at.
Definitely.
That's one of the things I'm looking at the minute is, I mean, the analysis of that tool is amazing. And if I can, if
I mean, the pivot tables on the Ultimate are brilliant as well. I must say, just the wrap tool, you could literally spend months on that.
No, it is superb. Basically, for people who don't know what we're talking about, it's almost like an artificial intelligence tool. You can just set it to search whatever you want within the database, and it comes back, tells you where the profit is.
And really, how I've used it is basically just trying to unearth some course-specific systems from that. I think it works well in that respect.
Yeah, it does. And then it produces graphs and charts, so you can check that it stands up. And I've got something else that we're going to introduce to take that a bit further. Brilliant. The trading, you've said I'm going to take care of that for you for the minute, which is something, again, it's again not doing too much. I think people try and do everything right in FTS, FTD. I say to people, I've said it again on webinars this week, if I genuinely believe it, I know it's my product, but I think if you had FTS Ultimate, that is plenty for most gamblers to be getting with without doing anything else. The ways you can use that, there's so many ways you can use it. You don't have to just use it in match odds. You can filter it and see over unders, in teams in odds brackets, all sorts. But we're actually adding the 2.5 market into it for next year. But like you say, but you're a man. I think reading and listening to you that you like the research side.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that was the whole thing that really drew me towards FTS in the first place, really. And I think it's the having the tools to be able to utilize the tools yourself, search for profitable angles yourself, and that have to be there. And it's just a matter of sort of doing your research. Like I said, I mean, this is just like it's a business, isn't it, really? And I mean, you do your due diligence and you do.
Yeah, the only danger with some of that is people get a bit sort of paralysis by analysis. They tie themselves up in knots. You've got, even with that analysis, you've got to have a logical sort of end point. What is it that you're trying to get to? What is it you're trying to, and logically go about it? But that leads me into, which I find fascinating, and I didn't know any of this, is sort of how you got to what you do. I've got to publicly say, whilst you may not feel you did a lot, you helped Jack immensely last year.
Oh, brilliant.
You now work in a field of academia. Jack was doing the exams, was having a bit of a breakdown, which I was talking openly about. You contacted me, which I didn't know. You actually mark the papers of the exam he was doing, so you knew a little bit, you knew a little bit about it, and sent some stuff through, and were very supportive, and I'm forever grateful for that.
Not a
But
problem.
what I didn't know, because when you sent that to me, I thought, well, that's what he's always done,
Certainly not.
that you have actually ground and grafted to get there. So perhaps tell us about how you ended up where you are now.
I took a quite an unorthodox route into academia. So I'm 51 now, as you put it. So that brings me to another thing. I mean, Newcastle haven't even won anything the time I've been alive, have you? With the exception of that Fairs Cup win when I was 5 weeks old in 1969. But So I was I'd done very I left school with very little qualifications as such. And did very quite a lot of mundane jobs. I did work for Royal Mail for 15 years prior to me my entrance into academia, and how that how it actually came about. I had the chance to go to university when I was younger because I did go to college, did a couple of qualifications, but passed that opportunity up. And it was just while I was working for Royal Mail, I just decided, look, I do have this sort of regret of not following that path. And wondered if it was too late to actually do that and pursue it in later life. So I was working for Royal Mail at the time. It was a great job at the time. Starting at 4 a.m., finishing at 12:30. So I give you sort of the rest of the day, but it was the early start, which I didn't mind. So I started studying to get into university on the part-time version of the law degree, which I passed up when I was younger. So I did that. That was Tuesdays and Thursday evenings. So it was 6 till 9 on a Tuesday and Thursday evening. So that was over 5 years. So I was working for Royal Mail at this time. So I got my degree.
What sort of age were you then when you did that? What age?
Sorry?
What sort of age are we talking? What age were you then when you were doing this?
I was in my 30s, Ian. So I didn't actually come into academia properly until about 2015, 5 years ago. So what happened then? I had ambitions of just joining the legal profession, one of the branches of the legal profession, but I just had a change of heart halfway through that, halfway through my degree, and just said, is it really something that I would want to do? And I became more interested in the research side of the law, and so I had finished my degree and still not sure what I was going to actually do with it, and it was suggested that why don't I apply for one of the scholarships, having done well on the degrees, you should be with a good shout of one of these scholarships that were going at the time to do a PhD, which was quite a daunting prospect because obviously it's a totally different beast, a PhD. But I did apply, was successful, and that was another 6 years on top of the 5 years that I had already done as an undergraduate, and that brings us up to December 2017 when I was awarded my PhD. But I'd already been offered a post in my current institution prior to the completion of that. So I left Royal Mail in 2000, and I think it's 2012, and 2013. Sorry, but I was doing sort of part-time work as a lecturer up until the point where I was actually taken on as a full-time senior lecturer. And that's where we are now.
Must have had some graft along there in that 5 6 years, that
It was pretty tough. I mean, it's like everything else, and it's not until you actually sort of look at how you end up, and it's funny how your life actually does pan out. And if you set goals, and I'm following exactly the same process now with this. And I mean that was 12 years of study nearly. I'm not for 1 minute suggesting that anybody who follows follows this route and applies the same approach to that to the gambling or that FTS setup, that it's going to take 12 years to become successful. It's just sometimes you have to realize what you've got to put the graft in, really. And for me, it was part time, and that's why it took double the time to do, because I was working full time as well for the majority of time I was studying, which is why it took twice as long.
Again, it just shows effort, doesn't it? Just shows, it's that. The one thing, and I said it, I think yesterday, the one thing I struggle with the gambling side is why people think it'll be different, why it doesn't involve any effort. The
No.
sort of mentality that, like you say, that a guy's going to give you some horse racing tips for a tenner and it's going to change your life. I just find it staggeringly stupid, to be honest. But I mean, for you there, I mean, you just reading it, I've got nothing but admiration for it. Similar to Sam last week. You look, I live in a bit of a bubble. I don't really go out much because this consumes my life, and I've got a small circle of friends. So I don't actually understand what people do and what their real life is about. When they come in a seminar room, it's hello, bit of friendly banter, do the seminar, have a beer afterwards. We don't actually go into what do you do, and to you guys like this. I mean, that, I was talking to Sam about it last night because I had this view that you'd done it all your life. I said, wow, he would have been, in effect, you're a postman who's decided somewhere in his life, actually, I'm going to do something else. And that's led to 11 years of study. And as I say, and helping Jack last year, absolutely superb. Brilliant. So what's the situation with it now? You say you're working from home now.
It's I think like a lot of institutions, that's been a massive upheaval behind the scenes just to try and cater for the students. Some students, of course, haven't been able to return home, and have decided to stay in the UK, whether that's for visa purposes or having difficulties in with our visas if they did leave. But yeah, we're still sort of facilitating exactly the same sessions, but in virtual form, really. So we have virtual classrooms set up. The assessments obviously have had to change, whereby you can't have hundreds of students sitting in assessment in an examination hall, of course. So they have been changed to online. So there's been a massive it's been a massive undertaking, really, just to try and get to this point and trying to facilitate teaching in some sort of normal way, and to just to help the students really as best we can.
Yeah, thank you for that. I mean, obviously my boy's finished, but his girlfriend, she's just finished her sixth year because she was doing veterinary at Cambridge. Just know that she found the upheaval again more just the mental side of the sort of uncertainty. Everything, like for all of us, everything changes, or has changed over this last 6, 7 weeks. And all our lectures and everything stopped, and literally, I think they did open book exams over the internet. But I just know that she found it, the uncertainty of it, more the mental challenge. I don't think she doubted herself for passing, but it was the uncertainty of what are we actually doing? When are we doing these exams? How are we going to be taught and all that? So I can't thank you enough for that, son. And well
Oh,
done.
no problem. Yeah, it's a problem.
Absolutely fantastic, fantastic journey. Full congrats to you to be where you are now. I remember seeing the picture, I think, is it on Twitter, of you in your PhD gear. Something to be proud of. It's fantastic.
Yeah, thanks for
We've got to get into the Geordie, son.
that. Oh, right. Must we?
You've just said 51 years without a trophy. I mean, they're a bit of an enigma to me because they are a massive, massive club.
Well, what fan base is, and I think I wouldn't sort of. It's a difficult one, really. I mean, we seem to be on this precipice of being able to do something special if the right owner came in. And Obviously, we've had an owner that came in. He knew his price in monetary terms of what he thought Newcastle were perhaps worth, but I just don't think he's ever really got to grips with the value of the club, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I've as I say, I've been up there. I love coming up there. Obviously, you've been to us. I've met you, the great Bobby Robson. I met him when you were when he was manager of you, and you'd given us a good paste in midweek. And I had some players' bar tickets, and he was one of my heroes. I absolutely loved him. Touched so close in the Keegan years, obviously getting so. But it is, as I say, you see massive fan base, and you think you look back, they actually haven't won anything. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. But you know, when you look at the teams that have picked up trophies, the Wiggans, Swanseas, Cardiffs, whatever, and they've won nothing, you think, wow, how has that happened?
It's a strange one. I mean, it's again, I thought Ashley might have been there initially when he came up and decided he wanted to buy the club. However, he did decide that he wanted. I mean, I've heard stories as to how he did actually purchase the club, but that's a different thing. But as a businessman, I just thought, well, this is someone who is very successful in his own right and maybe sees the potential that Newcastle does have, potentially have. But it just hasn't come into fruition, has it?
It's. I know there's other clubs like it's quite unique. Obviously, you've got the stadium right in the middle of the city. It's a massive part of Newcastle life, the football. What is it as toxic as it appears? Because it just seems so toxic now.
Oh yeah, it has been. It's rumbled for quite a while. I mean, we do go through stages where you tend to notice the unrest and the support at various times. But I think it has recently become. I think it's just the sense that the see Ashley as a type of gambler, because he's gambled in a sense with what Premier League safety over the course of what since he's throughout his tenure, and I think for a lot of people, I mean, notwithstanding who's potentially going to come in and take the club over, for a lot of supporters, whoever comes in next couldn't be any worse. I mean, I've got my own views on that as well, but I think, yeah, it's certainly they just see Ashley is using Newcastle or he's used the club just as a vehicle to drive his own sort of sports direct brand, really.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And you say you've got views on obviously the takeover. It's highly publicised. Linked to Saudi Arabia, obviously, coming out of Saudi Arabia. How do you feel about it?
Well, I'm a bit uncomfortable, to say the least, given the I'm just not a big fan of this the sports washing that seems to be the craze now, Ian, whereby you've got these countries who are coming in, sort of buying clubs, sports franchises, really in an attempt just to enhance their reputation on the international stage. And I'm just a bit uneasy about it, shall we say.
I have to say I am. I mean, obviously, golf went to Saudi Arabia. I thought that was, you know, didn't really agree with it. Think they've had boxing, haven't they? I think, I mean, I'm not a boxing fan, but they're, and it just seems to be a bit sort of, well, if the money's there, we'll forget what's going on and push it to one.
No, that's the danger, isn't it? And
Yeah.
I think that's what a lot of supporters seem to be overlooking. Where's the money actually come from, and how?
All these people have their sort of morals in certain things, and then, oh, you know, we'll get that because it, like you say, it's sport and there. So it'd be interesting. I mean, it's taking longer than I thought when I read about it initially. And they are obviously looking at it deeply.
Well, we're used to this. I mean, in terms of whenever there's a transfer window, whether it be January or the summer transfer window, there's always seems to be some rumor that emerges regarding a potential takeover. So we it's
I've been
kind of
told.
become it's come it's become old hat,
Yeah.
really. So, and you don't know whether it's true, whether it's not. I mean, this certainly seems to be happening. I just I'm not so sure. I think there's a difference, I think, between the regime Ashley was heading, whereby you've got he has a businessman, he's a ruthless businessman, he's not very well thought of in terms of how he actually treats his staff, has to be said. And I think there's a difference between treating your staff in a poor way and what's going to come in and replace him.
Yeah, no, that's right. And you got a story, a Jackie Charlton story.
Oh, this was this actually happened before I was before I was working there. It's customary, obviously, and you probably see this yourself at graduations for universities to offer honorary doctorates to people of maybe someone who's done a lot of work in the area that they're famous in their own right, and they maybe come from this part of the world. And we've had the likes of Johnny Wilkinson, Brian Johnson, AC/DC singer, Sting have honorary doctorates awarded. And on this occasion, it was Jack Charlton's turn. So at the time, we had a member of staff who was a deacon. She worked for I think the ministry or the church in some form. And she was very, very small. She was like sort of 5 foot high, with her high heels on. So anyway, Jack's been shown a tour of the school and then in the staff common room or wherever it was, and standing with her cups of tea. And she looks up to Jack and she said, "Bye." She said, "I can see why they call you Big Jack." And he just looked down and he goes, "That's not why they call me Big Jack." So anyway, the tea just went all over the place, and apparently she just made the hastiest of exits, and it was quite funny.
Brilliant, brilliant. He was great, Jack Charlton. I loved it when he was involved in bullying.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you saw this this article on the BBC News website last week sometime. And it was reliving the 1970 FA Cup final between Chelsea and Leeds, and how modern day referees would have approached the game now. Apparently, I think there was only one or two yellow cards that were issued in the game. And I spoke to David Ellery, and by his analysis, he says I would probably have issued seven reds, and Michael Oliver would have issued 11. So I think that's a demonstration, I think, as to how far should I say how far the game's advanced. Is that the right word?
It hasn't, but it was a different game back then, a different game back then. I won't repeat the Newcastle, but Lee Dixon, that happened at Newcastle. And my story,
yeah, I remember your story, yeah, about the
that flipping killed me. That did.
That was class, almost, didn't it?
Just great people up there, fantastic people. News reporting in COVID-19. Are we gonna have a ramble?
Well, you might as well. I mean, this was just something I stuck on the end, really, just in case you had any spare time or I had rambled on for. I just think it's a good these guest pods. I think, I mean, how could I possibly have followed what's happened previously? I mean, that one last week was excellent with Sam, and the ones previously, and just I think it's the more of your listeners that can actually come on here and share their experience, I think it can only be a good thing.
No, it's brilliant. No, I appreciate you all coming on. And like you say, for me, it's just great to chat to different people about their betting and this, that, and the other. I appreciate you all listen to the pod, and I waffle on about all sorts of things. And I accept that people have different views to me, but for you guys to come on and others get the chance, and I think you do yourself a disservice, Sam. Sam is a unique story because of the hardship he went through, but you're somebody who's shown with a bit of grind and a bit of work and effort and application how you can totally change your life.
Definitely.
I think that's what people can take from this today, is that, you know, to think it's easy is ridiculous, but it doesn't matter what situation you're in if you put a bit of work in.
And that Slight Edge book, I think, is a really good book to actually starting on that track as well, because it talks about sort of small steps that are very easy to do but very easy not to do as well. And I think it's just a case of starting.
I think that's the key thing, the not to do. You know, I'll give you an example. The FDD sheets, they have to be produced. Somebody has to get up every day and do those at 4, 5, 6 in the morning, dependent, and invariably it's me. And the amount of times that I roll over and think, I can't be bothered. But you make yourself do it, because it's not about what I'm doing at 4 or 5 o'clock. It's about what I get out of it for later in the day, this, that, and the other. It is. And too many people do just roll over, go back to sleep, and I'll do that later. And I think that's the thing. It is that, you know, and it is small, plot a path, take the first step and keep going. Brian, I can't thank you enough, mate.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
I hope that work-wise things get sorted and you can get back to teaching some students live at some stage.
Yeah, I've got a session at 12 o'clock actually. This is sort of restraint of trade and sport. Sorry, this is the for the sports law module, which I'll also teach on.
Well, and I will, as a little thank you for coming on, I'll be in touch next week with a little surprise for you.
Oh, splendid.
But
Champion.
I'll let you go, and I'll thank you enough.
Yeah,
Up at two.
pleasure.
Let's hope you don't get. I'll be honest, I don't want you to get the Saudis because I think it's bad news. But
Yeah, I do. I agree.
do hope the club. I do. It's a club I like. I do hope the club go forward positively.
It's just we all support what teams do. We all support what clubs, whether it's Sunderland, whether it's Tottenham, whether it's Arsenal, we just want our clubs to do well.
I have to say they take over London when they come down the old Geordies. So I've got a pub I use as my office, and they take it over. I don't like it.
Surprised there's anything left of it.
Well, the last time we were there, just before we finish, Paul and I were sat there. We went in and we'd ordered a breakfast, and three guys or two guys sat next to us, but they'd come down the night before as a Friday. And they'd lost one of them. They'd been out on the piss on the Friday night, and this guy had not been seen at all. He never made it back to the hotel. Absolutely. I mean, I said, "Aren't you worried about him?" They went, "No, he'll turn up somewhere." So yeah, they do come and enjoy themselves. I mean,
Yeah, he's probably not been seen since.
they make 6-8 trips to London, don't they? That's the thing. That's what you're
Yeah,
about them.
it's
They're coming down everywhere.
it's I mean, they love their trips to the capital, I must admit. Yeah.
Madness. We'll get you down when football's all down. We'll get you down to a new stadium.
That'd be great, champion.
Well, we got the rugby, didn't we? We're meant to be going to the rugby.
Yeah, I think that's been. I would imagine it's been. I mean, I haven't even heard an official announcement yet.
No.
I'm supposed to be running in the Great North Run again this year, but I haven't. I'll be deferring, like, because my training hasn't went hasn't went well. But that hasn't even been decided yet. But I can't imagine 50,000-60,000 people lining up to run over the Tyne Bridge in September in the
No,
current climate.
I'll keep. Obviously, I'll just keep those tickets, and we'll go when things are back to normal.
Great.
Brilliant, mate. Thanks ever so much for coming on, and
Not a problem.
I'll catch you next week. Brilliant.
Excellent. Thanks, Ian.
Thanks,
Speak
Brian.
soon. Bye
Bye.
now.
Okay, thanks to Brian for coming on. As I said, I hope you enjoyed that. For me, it's just the fact that with effort and as I said in the conversation there, making a choice to change something and do something, and 11 years of study, when you're working full time, that's an absolute grind, isn't it? But when you put the effort in, amazing what you can do. And from a postman to a law PhD, and as I say, marking the sort of exams that my boy was doing, should be so proud of yourself, Brian. It's absolutely fantastic. And the one message from me from that to people is, if you want to do something, put some graft in, and punting is no different. So yeah, thanks ever so much to Brian. Next week I'm talking to Steve Williamson about horse racing. Steve's a pre-race trader, so we'll look forward to that one. I think all of these have offered something. That's what's good. It's for me talking to different people. Brian saying the quality of them, I think I get something out of all of them. Absolutely brilliant. Love talking to you guys about gambling. I absolutely love it. Right, stat of the day. With the impending Bundesliga return, this one is for Ultimate Boys with the Poisson sheet. Poisson in the Bundesliga only. Home teams greater than 1.5. So home teams match odds 1 hour before kickoff greater than 1.5, where the home value on the Poisson sheet, so the value compared to the odds I generate, is between 0 and 10. So you that for you those of you with Poisson, that is column AK. Set it to greater than equal 0, less than equal 10 for the value figure. And where the top score, column S, so the first Poisson predicted score, is not an away win. So Bundesliga, the Betfair odds 1.5 or greater, value 0 to 10, and where the top predicted score is not an away win, so you're going to take out the 0-1, 0-2, 0-3, whatever the Poisson predicted score is, you would have had 152 bets for 25 points profit. Very, very good. And, you know, back in home wins, nice and steady as always. So that is the Poisson for that. That's it. That's the Poisson in this season. I'm just going to have a look and see what it's won this season. It is 6.5 points up this season. So very simple to find. You can do it all on a Friday. Just got to check the Betfair odds, check its value, and off you go. 0 to 10 on the value. So another way to use it. Get yourself ready for that, for the Bundesliga starting. Okay, so we've done the joke, we've done the kids' books, told you about Sagsy's tray. Brilliant, that was. Talked to Brian, given you a stat. I think I'm done. Right, ladies and gentlemen, I will be off. Stay safe, have a lovely day, and I will be back with you tomorrow morning.